As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is Pod Yourself the Wire. The Wire podcast where Vince Mancini and I go through every single episode of The Wire
and talk about it.
I'm so excited.
Wow, don't do that now. We just started.
Did we both just burp at the same time?
No. I thought you were yawning.
No. I was burping because I just had some salmon. Mm-hmm. I'm very excited for everyone to be here listening to the world's only The Wire
podcast.
Does the
room smell like jizz now?
Does your jizz smell like salmon?
No, because you burped. Never mind.
I get it.
Your salmon thing stepped all over my stupid joke. It's fine.
It's fine, man. I bet it was a good joke.
We're pros.
Yeah, we're doing the best we can. 5 stars in a review, please. Give us a comment. Like and subscribe. All that stuff, please. And when I say that, don't just tune it out, you fucking bitch. Do it. What's wrong with you? Why are you fucking tuning me out? Shut up. Sacramento Punchline, me, March 17th, 7 p.m. Buy ticket now. In link bio, please. Oh, man. Very excited for today's episode.
Great show. We have great show
lined up.
Very
for you.
Excited.
A fantastic guest of fun and great episode of Wire. So today we're going to be talking about from season 5 of The Wire, episode 7, Ooh. Took. Yes, we're talking about Took. And our guest this week is not a journalist. No. We have an actor. A great actor and homie of the show, ladies and gentlemen, and everyone else, welcome our guest, Brendan Sexton III.
Yay. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on, man. How you been?
Good, man. Good. It's good to see your face again.
I know. It's been too long. I feel like, I've been trapped inside because I have a child.
Yes.
And I haven't been able to, like, hang out with the homies.
Yes.
And What have you guys
Damn
been up
to? Child rearing.
Have you guys been like having fun, like going out and stuff?
Yeah.
Well, that's cool.
That sounds there's like a whole fun, world man. Out there, man. There's like 8 billion people. It's kind of cool.
I kind of, you sometimes. Know, do you ever miss COVID? Because like when COVID happened, it was like, oh no, we have to stay inside. Well, that sucks.
Yeah, there's no FOMO.
Yeah.
Terrible. I'm still wearing COVID sweatpants. I haven't.
Oh, sick.
You know,
nice.
I haven't graduated to previous normalcy.
Yeah.
I'm in the new normal.
New normal is COVID sweatpants and just hanging out with your one true love inside, never leaving.
Not doing a damn thing.
Yeah. Let's talk about Wires for a second. Brendan
yes.
Sexton,
yes.
The third.
Mwah.
Do you like The Wire?
I do. I do like The Wire. I enjoy it quite a lot. I was reluctant to watch it at first when it
Why?
First aired because I thought it was another war on drugs show.
Yeah.
I thought it was a propaganda show.
Yeah.
And I wasn't going to watch some propaganda bullshit.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then a few of my drug dealing friends were like, no, you got to watch The Wire.
They're like, no, 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 it's real.
Yeah, it's actually quite good. Yeah. And so I started The Wire with my girlfriend at the time on season four, when season four aired, without watching the previous three seasons. And in a way, it was a beautiful way to introduce yourself to The Wire, because that's probably the best season. And those kids just got on screen and could not lie. And it was just such a good season and great introduction to the show.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, speaking of great seasons of The Wire, what are your thoughts on season five?
I would say season five's main problem is that it's not season four.
Yeah, I agree.
If season five had to do itself over again, it should have chosen to be season four, because then it would have been better.
Yeah.
I think season five is not the greatest, but I do think part of the criticism of it is the letdown from season four. It's just season four 100%. Was such a difficult high to replicate.
I completely agree. We're a season five apologists here. You know, that season five gets a lot of undue criticism, and then also some very
legit
accurate criticism and accurate criticism. There you go.
Sure.
Well, it's the worst Wire season. It's like, oh, okay, it's the poorest billionaire. Great.
Yeah.
Like,
right. Yeah.
That's a good way of looking at it.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. It's the saggiest titty. Like, at the end of the day, it's still in my mouth.
Yeah. Agree.
You know what I mean?
I do very much so.
But Brendan, you are an actor, and you know, I've been familiar with your work for a long time. You were in Welcome to the Dollhouse. You were in Boys Don't Cry. You were in Empire Records.
These movies are 30 years old, by the way, at this point.
No, I know, but I'm still, but I listen, I could go into your IMDb and pick ones from recent, like Don't Breathe 2.
Yes.
Yeah. See,
that movie was not shot in Baltimore.
It was not. No, that's too bad.
I did do a Baltimore movie, though.
Oh, you did? What'd you do?
I was in a John Waters film. I was in Pecker, which we shot in 97, at the end of 97. Yeah, so I have some B-more experience, you know.
Did you, you know, when you were watching The Wire, was there part of you that was like, how do I get on this show? Like, did you watch season two?
I'll be honest. I auditioned for The Wire before I ever saw it. I auditioned for season two. I remember fighting with my agent about going in on it. And I was like, I don't like the character. Also, I'm wrong for it. Yeah. And, you know.
Were you going to be Frog?
Who is this Frog?
I was trying to remember his name.
He's the one in season two who's like,
he goes in
Ziggy
on a package
him,
with Ziggy.
Yeah, Ziggy gives him money.
Ziggy off. Right?
And he rips Ziggy off.
Yeah, it was that guy. And I was watching it and I was like, this kid's fucking brilliant. And
yeah, I know.
Probably from the neighborhood.
100%.
Yeah. And I was like, why'd you put me through that when I knew that's what you should naturally do?
Yeah. Yeah, well,
there's a John Waters joke in this season, right? Like, there's a
Yes,
there is. Yeah. They're in the newsroom, and they say, we have John Waters doing a new movie. We have cover art. It's him posing with child actors.
With child, Gus says, "Is that allowed?"
Yeah. And then he says, "Let's separate the art from the artist."
Right. Yep. So, yep. Wow. Well, you claim that you didn't remember this episode that well, but you remember.
But I remember.
That whole
I remember
sequence.
The good ones from this season.
No doubt.
Yeah. This one, you know, I gotta say, this is probably the first episode, and then we've watched six others. It's the first one where I was a little bit like, okay, so it is not the best season of Wires.
Yeah, but it's still, you know,
it's still a Wire.
It's still a saggy breast. It's still
Was John Waters cool?
John Waters was lovely. Like, he's such a nice man. And he was like, definitely, you know, when I was working with him, I was a child actor. I was a minor, and I had to have a guardian on set, and he was especially he was so concerned about like my supposed virgin ears and like didn't want me watching his previous movies. And I was like, dude, I'm already a fan. Like Female Trouble is my favorite. Like I'm already,
yeah.
I'm more corrupt than you can imagine.
I feel like
I'm 17 and I live in New York and I'm an actor. I'm out of my fucking mind.
Yeah.
Right. I feel like it's almost 100% degree. It's almost 100% correct that like people that have sort of a perverse, naughty public persona are always the nicest people, and all the people that have the most wholesome public personas are fucking evil behind the scenes.
Yeah, it's almost it's a rule of thumb.
He was super wholesome and he's always super supportive. And I remember like I saw him when he was doing stand-up like in 2010 or something, you know?
Yeah.
He would mail me his Christmas card for years until I changed the dresses and stuff. Yeah, it's just such a lovely, sweet
I love that person.
Yeah.
I love that. But you know what? This is not a show about John Waters.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Fuck that guy.
Fuck that guy.
He's never moved a key in his life. Actually, he probably moved a lot of keys.
Yeah. I can imagine.
You and Devon probably had all sorts of shit in the trunk of their Cadillacs.
I mean, listen, you got to fund a movie somehow.
Yes.
But this is a show about The Wire. And we, of course, cannot start the podcast without first playing the theme song.
Let's go.
When you pause through the garden.
The newsroom. Fake serial killer. Pod. Down in the hole. Season 5.
Yeah. All right, ladies and gentlemen, everyone else. Today, once again, we're talking about from Season 5 of The Wire, Episode 7, Took, which premiered February 17th, 2008. Vince, break us off a little piece of that synopsis.
I sure can do that. An unexpected call puts Templeton back in the spotlight whilst getting McNulty more attention than he expected. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Omar sends Marlo a message.
That is true. But what else happened? I mean, not in the show. In the world, dog.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. We can't evaluate art divorced from its cultural context. We have to put some of that cultural context back in, and we do that with the little thing that we call the back in the day machine.
It's a bad time for newspapers. The news hole is shrinking as advertising dollars continue to decline.
There ain't no back in the day
machine tells the tale, son.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, I was just going I happened upon one of Bomani Jones's old Wire reviews, and one of his comments on this season was that the editors at the Washington Post, they seem like white characters written by black comedians, which
that's great.
Makes me laugh. And when I see that guy's face in the back in the day machine clip, I'm like, oh, I see. Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, that makes sense. We're going all the way back to February 17th, 2008.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of things were happening. Dwight Howard wore a cape at the dunk contest. Remember.
Whack. Shaq is the original Superman. Fuck Dwight Howard.
Yeah.
That's corny.
He's also kind of not funny in general. He's very annoying. Anyway.
Dwight Howard. Here's the thing about Dwight Howard. And yeah, we're going to talk about it.
My problem
with him has always been that he was someone who, based on pure physicality, was able to be looked at as some sort of like franchise player superstar.
Right.
And I remember when they, the Magic got to the finals against the Lakers and being a little scared because I was like, oh my God, like, you know, this is the second coming of Shaq.
The kid and was a physical specimen for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he's like a huge guy. He's got these beautiful shoulders and he had no footwork, no passing. He had nothing. And I was like, who the fuck is this guy? Anyways,
his game didn't bother me as much as there was that period where they were like, let's turn Dwight Howard into like a personality. Like they were trying to turn him into the next Shaq in also in like the acting and entertainment realms. And I was
do you remember when he was talking shit on Stan Van Gundy at that press conference? And then Stan Van Gundy walked in on the press conference?
No, I don't.
Yes, and Dwight tried to play it off. Oh. fucking awful. And it's like Stan made you, bro. Like he taught you the pick and roll.
You can and guess what? You never really learned the pick and roll, did you? You fucking he taught you as best as he could, but you can't do shit.
I just remember when they would do bits where it was like, and Dwight Howard takes over the ESPN desk for a day. What a wacky guy. And I was this guy is
he's not Shaq. He's not Shaq. Yeah. Shaq trying can take to over the whack. ESPN desk, and exactly. TNT was smart enough to realize that.
Yeah. Exactly.
Other things that were happening: the financial crisis has not quite reached a fever pitch, but you know there are signs.
For me back then, I was broke as fuck.
Same. But also, I was on a lot of drugs at the time, so I was
flush on student loans that I would later have to pay back.
Oh,
I still have not done that.
I hate that you have to.
No,
pay those back.
I had a negative bank account for sure. Nice. I was definitely
headline there. From the New York Times: Britain to nationalize Northern Rock. That is the fifth largest mortgage lender in the UK. Decision to nationalize Northern Rock came after the government rejected two takeover proposals for the struggling mortgage lender, which ran into trouble because of funding shortage triggered by the subprime mortgage crisis in the United States.
Crazy.
The British public is now on the hook for about $108 billion in loans and guarantees to the bank.
I was working at a doctor's office at the time, and I remember watching like all the shit go down and being a little bit like, this doesn't really affect my ability to steal prescription pads. So I don't really see if this is
bad. Did you turn that into a side hustle?
No, it was just for me. It was for my own personal. That's I couldn't. I had trouble. I'm not a good businessman.
They would have caught up with you anyway.
Right. Yeah. And I just for my own personal use, I figured if I do get in trouble, you know, at least I won't be in as much trouble. And also, listen, it's very hard to sell drugs if you're not someone who's like built for it. Like it just you end up feeling bad because you're like, you can just have some drugs.
You seem like you need some.
Yeah. Like, I've been there, dude. I know it feels bad not having drugs. So you can just have some.
I mean, your business sense, it really explains a lot of why this podcast hasn't taken over the world since we partnered.
Ooh,
you know?
Cold.
He's right, though.
There's
he's
a
right.
rift. There's a
no,
rift.
If I was a good businessman, we would be
I'm not
be
saying
on
I am. I was just hoping.
No, you're
like
terrible.
You're the Ziggy.
You're the Ziggy of the bunch, and Vince is the Pablo Schreiber.
I think that's right.
And I'm not. I don't think Matt's that bad, or I'm that good. I think we're both somewhere like. I think we're both more like.
I'm the
Ziggy's
Ziggy.
Duck,
you're
you know?
Like Ziggy's duck. Yeah. you're gonna drink yourself to death in a saucer
Ziggy's
of whiskey.
Got a duck.
Damn. Yeah.
Other stories. I call this one "Where's the Beef?" It's getting recalled.
Is this Mad Cow? Are we talking about Mad Cow?
A California meat packer accused of animal cruelty is making the largest U.S. meat recall on record. The meat, 143 million pounds of raw and frozen beef produced in the last 2 years, probably has already been consumed. Thanks a lot.
Well, what was wrong with it? If it was just that he was mean to them, I don't really get it.
Hallmark Westland Meatpacking voluntarily recalled all of its beef produced since February 1st, 2006. The department said Hallmark violated rules against the slaughter of downer cattle or animals too ill to walk. But enough about Matt's mom.
You bitch.
The Humane Society of the United States showed videotapes showing workers at the plant using several abusive techniques to make animals stand up and pass a pre-slaughter inspection. These included ramming cattle with forklift blades and using a hose.
You can't kill sick animals.
Yeah,
right?
They have to be too. They have to be like healthy enough to stand, and they violated that one, I guess. And using a hose to simulate the feeling of drowning, so they're waterboarding the beef.
Oh man, okay. I don't want to eat that beef.
No, I don't.
I agree with them now.
Yeah. Now, okay.
Well, before I was like, yeah, what are you gonna? Yeah, you're mean to some cows. I mean, I'm already eating them. What's more mean
well, you
than
already
that?
Ate it. I like that they recalled it at, like 2 years after the meat was processed and sold.
So, do they get fined? They get fined like $3 million or something for that?
I hope so. I think there's a fine involved.
I remember the forklift. There was a video of that, and I remember being like, well, they're just trying to help them up.
Sure. They're heavy. Another one.
Yes.
Here's another story for you. Toshiba set to yield in DVD format war. Toshiba is planning to give up on its HD DVD format for high definition DVDs, conceding defeat to the competing Blu-ray technology backed by Sony.
Oh, who'd have thunk it?
Yeah.
Smart on Toshiba's part, by the way.
You think?
Yeah, because by 2012, streaming was the wave. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, yeah, I guess someone's still making a little money on DVDs, but it's it's like the...
For you mean Blu-ray?
Sony, their whole business model is to create technologies and try to force the market to only use that technology.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, I think they did so with... DVDs as well? No, wait. What was the thing they did it with? There was another technique.
They tried
it with mini disc, but they like the Walkman and things like that. Like it's always their style.
I don't remember who made VHS beat out Betamax, but right. Similar situation.
I saw in a movie or something that it was like had something to do with porn, and I was like, that also sounds right.
Well, it was very dumb. We had a Betamax when I was a kid. I remember going into the video store and like trying to find shit on Betamax, and it got
of course you did. You were a Max to Beta. I'm sorry, guys. I don't know what's with me today.
No, it was funnier because you stretched harder. Betamax was smaller. It was more portable and higher definition, but somehow VHS
right, better quality.
Yeah, it was better quality and more portable, and yet it lost. So it goes. Finally, we got a battle over some delegates. The dwindling group of elected officials and party leaders publicly undecided in the Democratic presidential contest. About 300 out of the 795 so-called superdelegates who may determine the party's nominee includes at least 30 who have a long and often personal history with the Clinton family. But more than 100
that
of
sounds
them,
democratic. Keep going.
But more than 100 of them are from states whose voters have spoken in primaries and caucuses and voted often overwhelmingly for Senator Barack Obama. Hold on, there's a good quote in here. The delegates are under no obligation to vote as they say they will. Already they are showing a willingness to change their minds, as Clinton was reminded when Representative John Lewis of Georgia switched course and said he would vote for Obama at the convention. I'm joining the witness protection program, said Debbie Kozakowski, an undecided superdelegate from Massachusetts. I told President Clinton on Sunday night when he called here that I remained uncommitted. I told him I appreciated him calling, but even he is not going to get me to do something. I mean, be careful. That's all I gotta
say. Yeah, I know. Listen, yeah, check out that Clinton kill list. You know what? I don't know.
Yeah. I think we're properly contextualized.
Are we contextualized? Is that everything that happened?
Yeah,
now we know.
That's everything.
I mean, other than a suicide bomb killing 80 people in Afghanistan, that was another thing that happened. Yeah. We don't care about that war anymore at this point.
Yeah, no. At that point, I was like, we're still there?
Yeah, what?
I forgot it about that.
We're probably going to be out next year or something, we thought back then.
I don't even care.
Just get through this election.
Yeah. Just deal with this election and then I don't care about the dead guys.
If I just vote, it'll be okay. That's what I think.
Mm-hmm. Don't boo. Okay, so that's what happened. And today's Ballmer B story, it is what it is. It's based on, we've had a lot of Clay Davis this season, and I feel like it's gotten the short shrift on the show because Clay Davis is a great character and whatnot, but it feels like this very much like a siloed side story. Mm-hmm. But this is the culmination of this season's Clay Davis stuff, where Bond, he puts him on trial and
state's attorney.
And it turns out does not go the way he wanted.
No, and Clay Davis turns on that magic, man.
That's right. And he plays the race card.
Oh, yeah.
The race card is played, which is why this song is The Ace of Spades by Motorhead.
Bondy took a gamble just to get his man. You win some, lose some at the Grand Jury.
At the Grand Jury, what I said.
He wanted to catch Clay, but Ego got in the way.
This really hurt my voice.
He placed in the jury, and he gets all scot-free. The race car played. The race car played. Clay talks to a lawyer, silver-tongued devil. They put on a show. It's all a game to him.
I want to stop playing it, but I really like it.
Wire 507, the fuck did I do?
All right, I'm just going to play you my favorite part. Well, it's almost done.
Clay Davis is like shit. The race car played. The race car played.
This is my favorite part.
Pond and Ronda lose, and Clay's back in the news. But that's the way I like it, baby. I really like the Wire.
All right. That's it. I really did
a spit take.
Oh, good, good, good. That one was a lot of fun. But goddamn, if I am choosing ones that are hurting my throat, I did Tool last week.
Oh shit!
Yeah, that one hurt a lot. But yes, Clay plays not just the race card, but the whole deck.
The whole deck, to, jokers, everything, the instruction, mm-hmm. the little instruction
yeah, the
manual card,
yeah,
all 53
the holder,
yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk about this episode. A lot happens. I mean, we've got more and more of McNulty's plan is coming to fruition in ways that are both good and scary for him. We have Omar. He's on the warpath. He's trying to find Marlowe, but he's doing so by putting his name on the street. And we have Kima trying to build furniture. Vince, tell me, what'd you think of this episode?
Okay, so I'm going to go back to the unfair criticism. I think a lot of the reason that this episode feels not as good is because we know that the end is coming, that we know that there's only three more episodes. And like when you know that there's only three more episodes. It's like there's more pressure on the show. Like everything that it does that is not a thing that you want to happen, you're like, you're wasting time. We're not going to get to the stuff that I want to happen. And I think another thing about this episode is that it's dealing a lot with the fake serial killer, which is a thing that's not really happening. So you're kind of this is an episode about a misdirect. So you're kind of wanting them to stop the faint and get back to like, all right, but what's happening with Marlo? What's happening? Right. You know, there's a little bit of Omar and Marlo, but we don't see Marlo, Chris, or Snoop this entire episode. So you're like, where are they? Like, don't hide them from me when we only have three episodes left. And all that being said, like, there are some things in this that I've remembered from, you know, whatever my last rewatch was 8 years ago or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like the scene where Gus is talking about Scottie Templeton getting took, like that.
Yeah.
That to me is like in the Wire canon. It's like one of those things that's like seared into my brain, that sort of little conversation where he's putting it together, where he's like, this guy's working this hard just to avoid a correction. Like, what else has he done? Like, that's a great scene.
That's kind of the only reason why I'll even entertain the serial killer storylines, because I want to see this Tom McCarthy character get his comeuppance, you know, like, fuck this guy.
Yeah, 100%.
He makes me so uncomfortable, that guy.
Yeah, he did.
From his first appearance on screen, like,
he's Weasley from jump. You from look jump at him and you're like, I fucking hate this guy.
Yes, yes. I thought they did a great job writing for him, just because.
Yeah.
And he did a great job portraying him.
The look, the acting, the writing, like he's like a definitive weasel journalist.
The only thing I like about that serial killer storyline. It's like, one, it does build up to a point where it's like, oh, is McNulty finally going to get caught? But here, mm-hmm. where McNulty goes down to the Baltimore Sun and questions the Tom Scott, McCarthy character, Scott, yeah. he questions him about the serial killer call and you just want this fucking reporter to get caught.
Yeah. And yeah. I think that's part of why it feels less enjoyable, because we know the show's ending, and like, this is a show mm-hmm. that's not about good things happening. Like, it would have been a cheat if, you know, they fixed Baltimore and yeah. the drug war. And did you know that's not going to happen? But I think in every other season, because you know that the characters go on and the show goes on, like, it does right. give you like these grains of hope for a happy right. ending yes. for certain people. Whereas yes. this, it's like, you know, McNulty is going to go down over this. Clay right. Davis has not gone down over this. Right. Omar, something bad's going to happen. Like, everything about this episode, like, every storyline is like impending doom. And yeah. it's hard to like, it's hard to root for impending doom.
Yeah.
Good call.
Even if yeah. it's like totally true to the story, and I think it is true to the story, which is why The Wire's great, but it, like, it's hard, you can't root for impending doom. It's tough.
Yeah, yeah. Tell me, Brendan, did you like this episode? What were your thoughts, your general thoughts on this episode?
I mean it really was about Scott Templeton fucking just getting caught. And like, yeah. even like, he gets a call from the serial killer. He has a meeting with the police and mm-hmm. the editorial board, and Gus is in there in the room with him, and Gus is still not buying it, or he's yeah. buying it but reluctantly.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Like,
yes.
that's how fucking good Gus is at his job. Like, he can yeah. smell shit from a mile away.
100%.
And yeah. he knows it's just not right. And he walks out exasperated at the end of that scene and saying, I guess I'm wrong, or something yeah. like that. But it's just, so I, you know, knowing that there's no justice in the world, and knowing that there's no justice in the world of The Wire.
Yeah.
Like, I just want vengeance from time to time, and it to be exacted on one single human being here and there. And Scott Templeton is
your guy.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like he's in my sights. Yeah.
I feel like that explains like the entire political climate of the US right oh, now, yeah. where it's totally. Like both sides oh, yeah. are like, we don't expect justice. We don't expect anything good to happen. The best we can hope for is that something bad happens to someone that we don't like.
Totally. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I think it, and that's on both sides of the aisle. I think actually, you know, like, the left is pretty ineffective at forcing yeah. systematic change, you know?
Yeah. So it's just like,
so it's like, what can we do on an individual basis? And it's like, oh, we could tear this fucker down.
Yeah. And yeah. it's not even, it doesn't even have to be like we don't expect any kind of like legal or some sort of systemic justice to happen. Right. But if we find out that like, Mitch McConnell gets hit by a car, we're just yes. like, hell yeah.
Yeah. Like, people will have a barbecue. There'll be some balloons, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, and
that's all we can get. That's yes. what gets us by to the next day. Is that literally little bit of joy we got from
the only thing you can expect death. is that eventually someone will die, and you just hope you don't die first. But that's very yeah. much.
I'm
like
just going
to
live
wire.
Out of spite. How about
yes.
that?
I mean, listen, I've said this before about The Wire. The show is mostly about spite as a motivator. And you watching this show and waiting for someone to get comeuppance, you know, right yeah. now it's like you're waiting for Marlo or Scott to get their comeuppance yes. because those are characters that we do not like. But we right. also know that this is not a show that gives you what you want. Yeah, I felt like this was the first episode that I found myself like, just to do the fucking Balmer B story. I was like, what am I going to do it about? And I was like, I don't really remember what happened.
Keep my putty together and I key your desk. No.
Yeah, I know. You should have sung it.
It's like, I get it from a writing standpoint. You're like, yeah, that's kind of funny.
And it's callback to McNulty putting together an IKEA desk.
It also feels like one of those bad infomercials where like the person like is really overdoing how hard it is to like open a milk carton or something.
Right. Yes.
You're like, okay, we're not that inept.
But it is still something that has some of my favorite very memorable moments, and that includes this opening. The cold open of this episode is McNulty doing a prank phone call, pretending to be the serial killer. I have a clip of that for everyone to, you know, see and enjoy.
Tight, tight, tight.
Templeton. I was just calling because I live down the street from you and your daughter come to my house today and she kicked my dog.
Do you guys remember this? Yeah, remember that?
Yeah.
And now my dog needs operation.
Hang on.
Fucking guy.
Okay, hang on. Who?
Is this a drug you?
Down the street from you. You know where I live. My dog. She kicked it and now I'm going to fuck her.
Okay. Don't hang up.
I'm going to kill you.
Oh, Christ. How was him? Again.
So anyways, he calls him and he pretends that he kicked his dog. He calls him and pretends to be the killer, and he gets a compliment on his Balmer accent, which, by the way,
was awful.
It was awful. He didn't even do a Balmer accent.
Well, I feel like there's levels of that. Like what's the subtext? It's like, wow, you did a really good Balmer accent. And then the subtext is like, what the fuck accent have you been doing for the rest of this series? Then there's a double subtext to that, which is that McNulty directed this episode. So
really?
Is that a self-deprecating joke that he's doing?
Definitely. It was definitely a writer's room thing because he's the actor's from the UK.
He's from the UK and he is not... There are seasons where he's not even trying. Like the fact that there are so many takes that they had him like slip up multiple times. You watch it in the show and it's like they do many takes on TV shows. I know that for a fact. Mm-hmm. I know how TV work. And it was like that was the closest they got, which just says a lot.
We're still going to fix it in post anyway.
Yeah, we'll fix it in post. Now it'll be AI. But so it is. There's a lot of storylines we could start with. I think
let's go to that one. Let's do that one. McNulty making the call as his serial killer. We got Lester Freeman. He gives like a very brief explanation of how he's going to call using his number spoofing software. Right. And McNulty's just like, I have no idea what you're talking about. And as a viewer, we're like, yeah, I have no idea what you're talking about either. And I kind of feel like it's The Wire. You could have gone a little more specific on that. We would have been interested to hear something like very process based about how you actually do that. I think.
I was fine. I got it.
It was fine. So then McNulty, he's chewing gum because he's trying to make his voice unrecognizable.
Right.
He's doing the accent. And then Lester tells him, stick to the script, which is a funny line in light of what comes next, where it's like, you wrote all that down about his riff about Mac Daddy, Crack Daddy.
Yeah, he calls him a Whack Daddy.
Whack Daddy.
Was he just reading all those things? Who wrote the script?
Did he write it on a typewriter? It's a Word document?
Yeah, doing his little hunt and peck like we know that McNulty does when he types.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it's clearly this is the part of the plan is to get, Phelan to okay a wiretap that includes picture messages and stuff. And so as soon as they hang up, all of a sudden, like the police have geared up and you see kind of like Sidner is in the area, like directing the call. Basically, he's using that cell phone somehow through some technology to like it sends a signal there so all the police will come there.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But I think what he doesn't expect is the fact that like now everyone in the surrounding area is just going to get brutalized.
Lawsuits open up left and right.
You see that happen. We're just like, hey.
Because hey, this is the harbor. Already. This is a nice area.
Not that I saw, just some people moving through. But it could be anybody. Let's just fan out and take names.
Yeah, just fan out and just start just beating on people. Yeah. Fuck you!
Get on the ground.
Get on the ground.
On the ground.
Who's got a phone out?
You got a phone? You got to get on the ground.
Heard be more accents, great.
Hey, come over here. This guy's on a phone.
Yeah, he's got, get him. He's got a cell phone.
Like three words out of that cop's mouth, you're like, oh, she's really from Baltimore.
Oh, yeah, they're from Baltimore.
She's definitely from the neighborhood.
But yeah, it's like the collateral damage that is done from this giant fane, this fake serial killer like plan is, I think, kind of apparent in this episode more than any others, because they also have Kima at one point interviewing a family whose son died in the streets, one of the homeless who was killed by the serial killer, quote unquote. And it's just so sad because you're just like, oh, yeah, that's right. Now these people aren't just dealing with the death of their loved one. Yeah. They're dealing with the fact that they kicked him out because he was an addict, which is a thing that does happen. Right. You know, eventually you stop enabling someone. And then instead of him dying of an OD the way, you know, you kind of expect, you find out that he's been like sexually bitten to death by a weirdo serial killer. It's like, oh,
see,
right.
That, but writing wise, like, I feel like that is one, that was one storyline where the fake storyline panned out in something real. Like,
yes,
they used the fake some storyline to get to some real stories that right. they were telling. And
yes,
that was great. And then we got like 10 minutes of her putting together a fucking IKEA desk. And I'm like, I don't know. I feel like this was kind of funny. Maybe a couple minutes of that would have been okay. And you went yeah. overboard a little
now,
bit.
I want more. Give me more of that.
You gotta see her struggle with the instruction manual. Like,
yeah, you gotta see her throwing
booklet.
Shit.
Yeah, yeah. She unravels it and she gets caught up in it.
Yeah, she's pushing it. I actually have clips of that, but I won't play it because I know Vince will get mad.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. What did you do? Did you?
I did nothing to it. Okay. I just was like, hey, you guys remember this? But yeah, so like McNulty is getting, you know, now finally he's getting people like he's getting City Hall engaged and actually pouring money into this case. So his plan of stealing a man from the street and then sending a picture of that man to the paper has worked out timing wise perfectly, because at this point Mayor Carchetti is like a fundraising machine.
Right.
You see him, you know, like laying back, he's getting people to like
92,
max out,
I think is the number.
And that was this was a great storyline. Like Carchetti was never like a good guy necessarily,
no.
but he goes from hating cold calls to, you know,
to loving them because he's so good
them.
At them.
Yeah, yeah. And he's getting his ego fluffed every time that he does it. And
you see him become the politician, sort of like fully realized, as opposed to trying to be the reformer. He's no
right,
longer
yes.
trying to be the reformer.
He can know. I mean, before he could separate the political from the reform things that he wanted to do, maybe. And like
right.
by this point, it's like he's blurred those lines for himself. Like he cannot
yes.
see out of that anymore.
Right.
Yeah. He actually, it happens pretty slowly based on, you know, the fact that he is brought in, I think, first season three, and his transformation from season three to now, like at this point he has fully accepted this excuse in his head with, yes, I'm going to let the city of Baltimore suffer now in all these different ways, but it's for the greater good of me being the governor someday.
Right. Yeah. and everything that's bad that happens to Baltimore, it's always about how it affects his campaign.
Yes.
It's not about how it affects the people of Baltimore.
Yes. Like the moment when he finds out that the serial killer has struck again, it's like this moment of like pure joy right before, where he's just like,
right.
Yeah, a lot of people want me to be mayor. I'm fucking, or they want me to be governor. That's what they want. And then Norman comes in and he's like, the serial killer struck again, sent a picture to the Times, or sent a picture to the Baltimore Sun. And he's just like, fuck, no. And he's like, you know, get me Rawls. Like, and he's not mad because like a guy is missing. He's mad because he's like, no, I was just feeling good about my chances to,
right.
you know, gain.
he's become an effective altruist at this point, I believe. safe. You know.
Yes, he yeah, is. You yeah. know, he's yeah, he's the it's same like, Bankman-Fried of Baltimore.
I got to collect all this money in goodwill so that I can do something for society at some indeterminate date in the future.
This is proto-effective altruism. You know this. Yeah, I got to become a billionaire, then I'll help you. But yeah, so he's finally, you know, he's letting the faucet open. He's mm-hmm. opening up the faucet. He's
faucet
like
is gaping.
The faucet is gaping and pulsating money, and it is hot. We're talking a straight prolapse at this point. Everybody getting paid, and McNulty is stuck in this weird position where the downside of this is that now people are treating it like a real serial killer. Which means that people are giving him resources that he absolutely does not need in order to catch this person. And like people are being pulled off their cases. Like Kima has a triple murder that she was working. And now she's going off to interview family members, to basically watch them and be sad with them as they tell a story that didn't actually happen that they don't know. And also, I really love the moment. Bunk has one of my favorite lines in this where, I'll just play it.
Voice analysis of the call.
Shit, I don't believe in that shit. Next thing I know, you want me to go to fucking Quantico with this fucking thing.
As a matter of fact, you don't believe in behavioral forensics, Dr. Moreland?
I don't believe in much of anything at this point.
Awesome. Well, how like that laugh is so good. He had an effect and presence off screen.
Oh
like,
yeah,
they were so good.
I mean, this. I feel
he
like
he didn't even have to say that line.
No,
like,
he didn't.
Said it in the laugh.
Exactly. In a,
it, yes. But the line is just a cherry.
It's
on
the
top.
Cherry on top.
Yeah, this feels like a Bunk episode. I mean, the whole like if you're talking about who like gets the best lines and the best scenes, it's for sure a Bunk episode.
Yeah, Bunk is he's doing his best to be the the good cop. And again, he's the good cop at this point out of spite. Like
he's the voice of reason.
He is the only one who's reasonable here. He kind of almost represents the audience in a way where they're just going, this is such a stupid plan. It's the last season of The Wire, man. Why are you doing this? Like, just you were going so good for so long. And and he has decided that he's going to be, catching these murders the old-fashioned way, which is like through police work. But it's like this is police work that I feel like he
and his ulcer are just gonna power through.
It's police work that he wouldn't have done if he wasn't spiteful, and it's also
he'd be drunk right now
and it's also you can say he's the voice of reason for like urging caution for McNulty's job, but it's not like his plan would result in a better outcome. Like
exactly.
He's maintaining a status quo that we've already discovered, like, doesn't care.
Shitty. Yes.
But he does happen, because of the spite, to stumble upon something that is going to bear fruit later. Mm-hmm. So he gets...
bear fruit.
What?
Sorry, go ahead.
He's looking through Michael's stepdad's case file, and he decides to bring in Michael Lee to talk to him about the murder of his stepfather. And scene, he doesn't get anything from Michael, but you know he's on the right track, because as it turns out, Chris actually did do this murder, and that is going to be the thing that gets Chris behind bars. But meanwhile, what he's waiting on is some DNA from the crime lab to be analyzed, but of course it's not yet been analyzed because they're working on a fake serial killer, which
but they also mixed up all the blood samples.
They mixed up all the blood samples because of a temp. But McNulty,
all those people were innocent, but then some temp came and messed up
exactly.
The blood samples. That's what happened.
The temp came in and then just said, hey, what are
sabotaged
we
sabotaged it on purpose.
That's right. And then McNulty, while he has to deal with that, you know, ancillary issue, people trying to get him to go to Quantico and stuff, he is also dealing with the fact that everybody knows he's a money man now. Yeah. And this is just a collection of the moments in which McNulty is being magnanimous.
Totally. And, he's the Don.
Has to park on the street and walk across the grass. He still has the fucking patio doors.
Two more men do it?
Yeah, and two more cars, yeah.
I got more bodies than I can use on my serial thing. Let me make a call. Hook you up with two tack guys.
And you can do that.
Go with God.
Strangled a 20-year-old. Stuffed her under her bed. Okay, give my CC the motor pool. I'll bury the expenses in the OT of my file.
Thanks, brother.
I can give you two nights.
If he hits on the third.
One night.
Okay. Okay. Two nights.
Put my CC number on the OT slips, and you give those to
Jay. It's cool. I know the drill.
You do?
You're doing good here, boss.
What did you just call me?
Good line.
Him realizing that he is now a boss is, I think, one of my favorite parts of this episode. Is just the now he is stuck in this position where
a position he was almost relishing at one point.
Yeah, I mean, he liked the position of being the guy who's going to give, you know, give out money, you know, hide stuff in his in this case file.
He wants to be important.
But he also is someone who has just, I think, almost like a DNA level aversion to bosses. Like, he just hates bosses on principle.
Yes, he has some sort of DSM disorder, probably.
Yes, he's got oppositional defiance disorder.
There you go, that one.
For he's bosses. Odd. Yeah. Yeah. For any job he has, which, you know, listen, if you don't have that, then you're not normal, in my opinion.
Yeah, you're a cop.
You're a cop. Exactly. I mean, you know, yes, he's a, speaking of cops.
What does this mean? We have to wrap it up? I'm the cop, and you guys are too loud, so I'm going to have to shut this down. No, but I'm sort of the advertising cop. We got to turn on the money fountain.
Let's do it. Make that spigot flow.
Let's spigot.
Open up that faucet. Like
what's that in the background? What am I hearing?
They're like renovating the apartment next door.
I thought it was like whales or something.
Yeah. I thought I heard Vince's mom.
Come on.
Well, it is time to take a quick commercial break. So stick around. And we will be right back. Shut up, Vince's mom. Hey, Vince.
Hey, Matt.
As you know, Vince, I love old internet memes. Remember the early internet's obsession with Chuck Norris jokes?
I do remember that.
Here's one. When Chuck Norris went to college, he told his father, "Now you're the man of the house."
Why do you bring this up?
Well, I was thinking about those old memes, and I started thinking, I wonder what Chuck Norris is doing right now. What has he been up to?
You know, I actually know the answer to that, Matt. Yeah, I recently saw a health video he made, and I was surprised. He's in his 80s. And he still seems to have energy and health.
You know, I saw the very same video, Vince, and in it he says he's even stronger, has more stamina, and plenty of energy left over for his grandkids since making one simple health change that helps his digestion and nutrition.
That's almost too powerful to contemplate, but yes. It's true. He says he still feels like he's in his 50s. His wife made the same change, and she's never felt better. She says she feels 10 years younger and has energy all day.
I am way younger than them, and I have energy for about 2 hours a day. And the problem is, you know, that many of us do not include fruits and vegetables and other herbs that increase health and energy in our own diets. Chuck Norris made a special video that explains how he incorporated these things with one simple product.
I love special videos, and you can watch it too by going to mymorningkick.com/podyourself, and it may change your approach to your own health.
Once again, that's mymorningkick.com/podyourself, mymorningkick.com/podyourself. Go there now and watch this very special Chuck Norris video.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
And we're back. So we're talking about McNulty being the boss.
You did skip over my favorite line of this episode in that sequence, which is another bunk line. I mean, just bunk being in the room while Jimmy doles out favors and patronage is excellent. Best part of the episode. And there's one line in there where he says, "Well, ain't you the little king of diamonds?"
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
That was very good.
Great line.
Like McNulty,
I actually think that's a hard line to deliver.
It's quaint.
It's antiquated, but like Wendell Pierce, he's probably the only one who could deliver that.
Right. Really. Like you can imagine David Simon writing that, but you 100%. Can't imagine like many actors nailing that. And Wendell Pierce, one of the few that.
Yes. Like in a book, it works, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, like, okay, they created this world and people have a particular language, but
it is I think
no cop with an ulcer is going to talk like that,
right? And I think
unless
it's like,
he played lacrosse in high school,
right? Well, there's a few characters who I feel like can deliver those like fancy boy David Simon lines. And it's
Landsman,
like
being
Jay
other.
Landsman. And
who's Landsman?
Landsman is his played by Delaney Williams. He's like
the fat guy, the real fat guy.
Amazing.
Like he's great at delivering just a string of David Simon-esque insults and swears
while reading Jugs magazine or while reading a Jugs fish.
And eating a full sandwich that's mostly mustard, and just like. Just saying the most, antiquated string of swears you've ever heard.
It's like he has that Danny Houston, F. Murray Abraham thing where it's like they can only play theatrical characters, but they make 100%. You believe it because you're like, oh, well, sometimes you meet a theater kid in real life and they just play 100%. Those people.
Yeah, sometimes these guys exist.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Is Omar the other one?
I mean, Omar for sure. Yeah. Omar is someone who is
he's a
fantasy
speaks with poetry
character.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. He's definitely a comic book
100%
mythic figure. Yeah.
Yes. He's a superhero. He's a comic book character. He's the one you will suspend disbelief and watch him do all sorts of stuff, which in this episode is interesting because he is continuing his rampage trying to get Marlo out into the street. So you see him, you don't see him, you see a stash house that's been shot up and had all the drugs flushed down the toilet. and you see him talking to Savino. This is the first time
out of spite. Again, out of spite.
Yeah.
This dude normally makes his living robbing the drug dealers, but no, this is personal now.
100%. Yes. This is like for him, he's going full Joker mode.
This episode should have been called Spite. I'm sorry.
Yeah. most episodes I feel like should have been called Spite. there's this great moment where we see Savino for the first time in a while. We haven't seen him since his Barksdale days. And you know, he's at this point, Homer's been letting people live just to send a message, like tell right. Marlo he's a bitch and that his mom's a whale and stuff. But he decides not to. And I think I have a clip for everyone that I think everyone will very much enjoy.
There. When he did the old man like that, I wasn't there. Chris and Snoop, they on that.
Well, I know it was there. What you was gonna do if he was there, huh? Riddle me that. You know what, yo?
What
the hell is that?
Yes.
Brilliant. It's a little Empire Records shout out. I just
brilliant.
I edited it in and stuff. I like to do edits, Brendan.
That's the sound of you patting yourself.
That's
on
me
the back.
Patting myself on the back because no one else pats it. Yeah, so Omar is going through, he's killing Savino. Everyone at the record store saw it.
The lighting by the with the strip club in the background is beautiful.
Like, yeah, this is
really incredible. And there's even a moment where the lights in the background are green, like a neon yellowish green, and Savino's in like neon yellowish greens.
Yeah. Oh,
fucking incredible composition.
Yeah. I mean, I think this show really, if there's one thing you can say about the fifth season, at the very least, compare it to the composition and the shots in the first season, and you're like, oh yeah, they it's like they learned how to make a show where
they got a budget. They were allowed to wet down the streets at night, like
yeah, and they were also like, I feel like they were trying to do something in the first season where it was almost like there was a lot more hand cam. There was a lot more like kind of shaky, you know, this feeling of almost doc style.
We're doing NYPD Blue or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah. They talked about that in the book where like that was like their plan was to shoot all the, like the slum scenes, like in handheld camera. And then they sort of dropped that, like Robert.
Colbert's, it's actually like, way more, need... it's actually way more tense that it's still.
Yes, 100%.
And moving actually like would have taken the tension out of it.
Yeah,
yeah, I have a
the
whole,
fact
like
that
I,
the
yeah.
the movements are slow and smooth actually makes it more tense instead of having it be janky and jarring.
Yeah, that's kind of like my bugaboo lately is that every action movie, like they're trying to impress you with how many camera moves they make, and you're like, dude, just hold. Like you have the best fight choreographers and stuntmen in the world doing cool stuff, and you're gonna make me like watch it through your shitty swoopy like moving steady cam bullshit. Like just put the camera still and let them do what they do so we can enjoy it. But no, it's always, it's like a, it's like a camera move dick measuring thing, and I fucking hate it.
Yeah Also, like at this point, you know, it's almost like kind of brilliant that they dropped it because of the fact that became a thing you would see in everything. Like there was a certain point where every show had to have
directed Friday Night Lights. Who's the actor who's now like
Peter Berg?
Peter Berg. It's kind of his fault. Like,
it's also, it's like if you're,
cause he presented it to like a mainstream audience first.
Right.
Yeah.
He popularized it.
But also like in The Wire, if like the whole thing they're doing is trying to like present these parallels, like in this episode, they have cross cutting between the newsroom and the police station. And like the whole season, they've been trying to like make these, establish the symmetry between the drug world and the police world. Like, why would you shoot them differently if you're trying
100%.
To?
100%. Right.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. And it just, it was kitschy and just not, I think it was based on
some white people shit.
It was white people shit.
But straight up, that's what it was. Mm-hmm. It was white people shit. And even, you know, even if they had someone behind the camera, it's still like, you know, the higher up aesthetics, the higher ups with, you know, we're saying like, we got to make this edgy and this is how you present edginess.
We got to tell white people what gritty, like being on the streets is like.
Yeah.
It's gritty,
right.
It's
scary.
Yeah.
It's, on the streets, even the cameraman's on crack. It's like, come on, what are you doing? It's very annoying, and I'm glad that they dropped that. It's a beautiful season to look at. Moving on, also Omar, you know, he
robs. But Omar finally, like, he fucking shoots Savino. He murders him in cold blood. And he says, you know what, fuck it. Because the thing Omar said to him was kind of beautiful. It's like, yeah, you weren't there, but if you were there, what were you going to do? Back out and not shoot Butchie?
He knows exactly what this guy is about. And I think the thing with Omar at that moment, he also was just like, you know, at this point, I've told enough guys that Omar's a bitch and Savino is a heartless prick and has no code. I'm just going to shoot this guy. Yeah, which I feel like for the actor who played Savino, when he found out he was like coming back for season 5, he was probably like, fuck yeah! And then he read the scene, he was like, god damn it! But if you're going to get killed by anyone on the show, I think it's an honor to get killed by Omar.
Right, get killed by Omar.
Omar then, he goes up to Michael's crew and once again is like, by the way, Marlo's a bitch. And... The first time and the first character ever on this show to see Omar with different eyes is Kennard. Yes. Kennard sees him and is just like, that's Omar? And then he calls him Gimpy as a motherfucker. And it's funny because you see everyone else is like frozen in fear and they're like relieved when he leaves, but they're still like, they're all shitting themselves except for Kennard, because Kennard is just like, oh, he's just a guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's just some guy. And not only that, but he's a guy who's limping. Like, what are we, why are we scared of this guy?
He's on his last leg, literally.
Yes, yes. And it's funny, you know, like how much... you know, the show is known for its verisimilitude, except for Omar. With Omar, you just you allow him to be Omar because he's so fucking cool. And I think one of the reasons that people hated this season is because they dropped that.
He was vulnerable all of a sudden.
They dropped that, and then
and they've turned him into a cold-blooded killer. I mean, he was all along, but you like.
I mean, he wasn't cold-blooded. I feel like everything he did
it was always in a gun battle, and now we crossed the Rubicon here, and that's kind of a tell that you know he's gonna die because that happened.
He's invincible before and now he's vulnerable. It's really, you know, he's repulsive to look at, actually. Like, he's not even limping on a proper crutch. He's limping on a broomstick.
Yeah.
That, you know, a crutch that he made himself, he fabricated out of the broom closet.
And yeah.
It's not pretty to look at all.
Yeah. And it's like, it's cool that he's doing the Joker thing where he's just like, some people just want to watch a world burn. He's burning all the money and stuff. Like, but at the same time, you see where this is all going, and you just know that, you know, the show's about to end and this isn't going anywhere good. So moving on, in terms of the storyline for the newspapers, you talked earlier about just some of the Gus stuff. And this is like one of my favorite Gus episodes because this is finally Gus is getting to the bottom of all of his bullshit.
Yes.
And he is so mad about what's happening with Scott because, like you guys were saying, like in that scene where, you know, obviously, you know, he was there, he watched him get this call, the police come over and say, yes, you got this call, it was from the serial killer, and Gus is still like, this doesn't make any fucking sense,
it doesn't sit right with him.
Yes. And you just watch
him. I was talking to him again.
Again.
That was great.
And then it was just like, did he sound the same? What do you mean? Like from the first time? Oh, yeah.
But he had a bunch more accent.
But different. And like Gus is smelling the bullshit on all this. And I love him complaining to his editors or his bosses about Scott's piece. Because he just is like,
but he presents it in a professional manner, and it's 100%. A journalistic grievance. And it's not out of petty human envy.
It feels real because it's like, that is the way that you smell a rat in those situations. Cause it's like he had carte blanche to put himself into the story and do a first person piece, and he still had to like gild it. Like he still had to exaggerate how much danger he was in, exaggerate how long he actually spent with them. And the same thing with like getting took. It was, you know, it was that woman who he made up this whole story about mistaken identity just to avoid admitting that, like, oh yeah, my source, your source lies to you sometimes. Like, it's unavoidable. I feel like that's just such a, it was such a great way to depict that, because it's not, it's not like the huge lies. It's like the, it's the pointless lies where it's like, there's not a ton of upside in this.
There you go. The bar scene. That's where I'm going. Are you going to show this? Cause
yeah, I'm going to show the bar scene and then him talking to his colleague.
These women are twin sisters. One's been carrying the other one's hands around their purse for the last 12 years. He's yanking your chain.
It's embarrassing, ain't it?
I can't believe nobody had sense enough to tone this down.
The hype is bad enough, but what gets me is I can't trust the guy. I mean, I sent him back out on the street to own his mistake. He comes back with some bullshit about stolen identities. I didn't even fuck with kids, took. Everybody gets took now, man.
I know I did.
It's about not owning up to it.
You think the first time you catch him is the first time he does it?
A lot of guys will try to duck a correction. But the thing of this is, he was standing on an outright lie. And if he'll lie about a correction...
Then will he lie to make a story better than it ought to be?
I keep thinking about that kid in the wheelchair out in front of Oriole Park. One only had a nickname. Black kid from the west side, crazy for baseball. Basketball, yeah. Football, sure. I don't want to call another reporter a liar.
I really don't.
I just think that's like, it's so perfect because you're seeing Gus putting all the pieces together. It's like when you find out that someone you know is like full of shit and then you go, oh yeah. Like we've all, I think, known people who just were pathological liars. Like they just couldn't help themselves. But I think the difference is like finding out someone has just been making shit up. Like to me, there's nothing more embarrassing than that. I would almost, if I found out someone I knew was like lying about something big, I would just never say anything about it ever. I would live with that lie with them. That's how,
but that's how pathological liars get by.
Yes.
Because they know people don't want to get took. Like, they know there's embarrassment and shame involved.
Yeah.
And being took the first time. And they know you don't want to say anything about it. It's how scammers operate.
They thrive on that. It's that and the bullshit asymmetry principle or whatever it's called, where it's like it takes them so much less work to make up some shit than it takes you to prove that they're bullshitting, because you have to be all even handed and like give the benefit of doubt over this and that. But they just say it and then you have to do all the work.
Right. Yeah. You just, you have to be the one who,
it's like that quote attributed to Churchill, whatever. It's like the truth, the lie travels around the world three times while the truth is still pulling on its boots or some shit.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I know a lot of Churchill quotes, so I knew that one immediately.
Yeah. Before I even uttered
it. I'm not even a liar. I don't even lie about
You don't even lie about lying.
I don't even lie about lying.
I like that Gus is reluctant to he's call like, he's still a journalistic professional. Like he's still a journalist in his heart, in his soul, in his bones. And he's like, I don't want to call another reporter a liar. Like, even though he knows. Even though he knows.
Yeah. Well, he's also in the position of, he knows his bosses just think he's a hater. So he's like,
And it's like, I mean, he is the great white hope and he knows he has this uphill battle.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the thing is like, he is kind of a hater, but like within reason, it's like,
it's all justified.
It's super justified. It's very reasonable.
But the way he justifies it is justified. Like I'm saying, it's not a personal attack. Like it still comes from being a reporter. And like,
he is investigating him from both a feeling of like, I feel like this guy is lying, and a little bit because he's a hater. Cause he's just like, also this guy fucking sucks and he's thirsty. And like, And, you know, like right. he is also a fucking tattletale. Like he's like being
lazy and he's lazy.
He's lazy
and thinks he's better than he is.
Yes. And he's impatient and he's ambitious to a fault. And he's, you know, he at one point was like, you know, when the editors came over, when Gus didn't like some other piece. I think it was the one about like the kid in the wheelchair.
Right.
You know, he's writing about the opening day at the Orioles Stadium. And, you know, Gus was like, this sucks. And we can't prove that this kid exists. And then his bosses come over and they're like, great work, Scott. And he's like, yeah, well, I don't think other people think so. And it's like, you fucking bitch.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to snitch just like that. And
well, they're forcing Gus to be objective about to find an objective truth in something that he already knows is emotionally right. true. And like, he's kind of annoyed with the bosses because like they should be cynical enough to
see. That's the job.
Because it's like, yes. You don't notice it because you know the truth. You notice it because the writing's bad. And it's like their job to notice when writing is bad, but they don't because
even the Washington Post pointed that out.
Yeah. They're like, yeah, this kind of sucks for us, but I could see how it'd be good someday. But yeah, Gus is putting all the pieces together and we'll see where that goes. Finally, Clay Davis. This storyline, I felt this way the entire season, was this storyline suffered from there being this limited run, like this being the shortest season, right. This also being the last season, which I think it's clear that they knew because of the way the show kind of like ends with the fucking season one theme song and all that stuff. So because of that, a lot happens in a short amount of time with this Clay Davis story. And this is a story that I feel like would have, had it had time to breathe, would have maybe felt like not such a narrative leap. Like we weren't like almost, it's almost not relevant. Mm-hmm. And
like it would have come back, like they would have found a way to make it relevant, but like in having to rush to a finish line, it's like
two more episodes.
It also, it just sort of happens too fast. Like there's like the big buildup that they're going to get this guy, and then one day in court and he's out and it's over.
Yes. One day in court. And then also like as a viewer, you're kind of like, well, we've seen this, like, you know, this prolonged grand jury thing. We see all of this work that Freeman and Sidner had been doing up until that point to like follow the money and stuff. And to have it all kind of like happen in this one episode feels like they did the storyline a bit of a disservice. That being said, it has some of my fucking favorite moments of Clay Davis. Like him going on the steps of the courthouse and like the way he talks to the press in this way that like for the white people there, they're just like, get a load of this guy. How do you guys believe a word this guy says?
Yeah.
But you see that there's a clearly a cultural disconnect where people like who are white are just like, what? This guy is like very much a criminal. And the rest of the community is like, fuck yeah, this guy's about this guy is for us. And
damn right,
this
is a criminal.
And I feel like this obviously is not, you know, this is not just it's not like white people can see. I mean, white people also get tricked by people like Carchetti or by people like Donald Trump. You know, we are also fall for charlatans all the time. But
who's the white guy? Who's the developer developing the harbor?
Andy Krawczyk.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
Krawczyk was in cahoots with Clay Davis. Like,
yeah, I mean, all these people, they all see him as a useful, you know, tool for their own, you know, little villainous scams. This is just wonderful watching him work. Like, I think this is the first time, you know, is this season when you see him talking to his constituents and like, you know, talking to the media and realizing like, oh, this guy is smooth as fuck.
Oh man. He fucking lays it on thick.
Yeah. He lays it on so thick. And, I have a clip of him on the courthouse steps with just all of the best malapropisms. It is so good. Here it is.
Promise is bound.
Yes.
Simple man who was a
horrifically punished by the powers that be for the terrible crime of trying to bring life to God's people. In the words of
the reporter trying to accept
Vasilius.
He
goes unpunished. I cannot tell you how much consolation I find in these slim pages.
Just Promethus Bound, written by Vasilius. Just the look on that reporter's face, who, by the way, I'm like, that is David Simon casting himself, right? Like, that's not actually David Simon, but that's right. David Simon casting someone to play him, because yes. He kind of looks like him.
I think probably sees himself in Gus as well, right?
Of course.
No,
sure.
That's a journalist playing himself.
No, you mean that's a real writing?
Be saying like,
yeah,
David Simon wrote himself into the story and got someone else to play David Simon.
He did, but Bill Zorzi in the show is played by Bill Zorzi. The
right? I got that.
Yeah, yeah.
Just like there's something about the way.
But David Simon's in some sort of press junket in the show, right?
Yes, he is in season two or something. You hear him like ask a question to Frank Sabatka while he's being arrested.
He's got a little pad or something.
Yeah, but I feel like Bill Zorzi's character is almost just the way he's written as this kind of like tough guy and also funny and also like self-aware and also like get a load of this guy when he's watching Clay Davis. I'm just like, I don't know. In my mind, I was like, this is David Simon writing himself, like the character he would be, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like that's what I saw.
I see that as well.
Yeah.
To me, it's very apparent.
Yeah, you see that like later. I remember at one point when I think it's Carchetti is talking at a press conference like in the next episode or two, and he's just like goes like under his breath, "Oh, he's so butch." And I'm just like, David Simon, these are the things that he said when he was working at the Sun. The thing I got. So we see this trial happen. At this point, you know, Day Day, who was the driver played by Donnell Rollins, has flipped.
Ashy Larry.
Yeah, Ashy Larry himself is on the stand, and you see that like the plan that he is concocted with his lawyer is not so much to they don't cross-examine Freeman. And Day Day, they just wipe the floor with him by like making him expose himself as doing like a quid pro quo. And I really love Donnell's like performance in this scene. It's just so, it's so funny. And I have a clip right here.
Fair to say that testifying against Senator Davis ensures that you will not yourself go to jail.
Goddamn right.
Mr. Price?
Mr.
Price.
Okay, my B, Judge. Sorry.
Mr. Price, you expect this jury to take the word of a twice convicted felon.
Y'all can play it like it feel and leave me be.
I mean, for Rhonda and Bond, it's like clear that this is not going their way. And the best part is...
they're getting fucking steamrolled, man.
Dude, like, and Clay really... he puts on the performance of a lifetime, and it is so funny watching.
He's Barnum and Bailey.
Yes.
Well, we got to credit Bill Murphy, the guy who plays Clay Davis's lawyer, who's an actual lawyer. Like, he's not an actor, but you wouldn't know it.
I thought he was a lawyer. I was like, this dude's way too fucking slick.
Yes.
But I don't know. There's other people in the show where you're like, oh, well, this person's not an actor because they're not good at acting.
Right. Or they're not slick. They seem gruff.
Yeah. But this
like
guy.
The other guy, like the former chief of police guy who plays who plays Detective Norris. You know he's not an actor because he says his lines too fast and
he's not good at acting.
Yeah. But this guy. Is not this guy who went on to like represent Freddie Gray. Like he did it well.
I didn't know went on to represent Freddie Gray. Good for him.
Yeah. And it's interesting too, because he's playing like such a slimeball character. And, you know, it's like, I don't know. I guess acting is acting and it's a lot of fun. But the way he's able to play this like Johnny Cochran-esque character mm-hmm. is like pretty beautiful. And they just
and he lays it on thick too. But
yeah, and at one point in the scene where Clay is you know, saying his case on the stand, he calls Bond Obanda.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which is crazy because like
I don't know,
Obama's still a senator at this point.
Yeah,
and he spoke at the national convention, and that's what propelled him into the national spotlight.
So I have like two theories on this. One is that he was calling him Obanda because he looks kind of like Obama, and he's just saying like, you know, this is just some smooth talking, you know, wannabe fucking like ambitious
up-and-comer, newer. Yeah,
that's what it was. I'm pretty sure.
Well, my other theory was like, because I was like, damn, like they really, that's quite a reference, you know, before this guy's even president. I mean, Obama was known in political circles, but but when he ran for president, he was a relative newcomer. People didn't know who the fuck he was. And he gained a national, notoriety or not notoriety, but fame after the fact. So my other theory is that he was calling him Irish. Like Obanda? I don't know, man.
Oh, he's out there with his pot of gold.
Oh, there's Obanda over there trying to arrest a simple senator. But yeah, I have the clip of
I bet that's an actor embellishment. I bet that's a little fucking.
You think that's sprinkle. Isaiah McClintock?
He threw on one take.
It could be.
And they don't even show him saying it. It's a cutaway, and they show Bond actually when he says it.
Is that what happens? Hold on. I have a clip. We're going to find out.
How they do it out in Roland Park? Maybe
Park.
Prosecutor Obanda can enlighten me.
I'm wrong.
But my world is strictly cash and carry. Senator Clay? I gots to bury my mother. And excuse me if I didn't ask that old arthritis woman for a receipt. And if the jury of my peers, you all, deem it right and true for me to walk out of here an upright and justified man. Oh, I ain't gonna lie to you. I'm gonna do the same damn thing tomorrow.
I'm gonna
do. And the day after that, and the day after that, until they got me laid out at Marge's funeral home and trucked me off to Mount Auburn.
Brother. So good.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
It's so beautiful.
I think the thing about that line is like. Even like, yeah, they knew who Obama was, but like this, like you figure they had to film this 6 months before it was.
Yes,
you're right.
Before it was released, and that's 6 months before Obama's like still not the nominee. Like I guess he's been senator
not even
for
running.
A little bit.
Yeah,
I guess maybe he started running in 2006, right? Yeah.
I mean,
so maybe he was known. He started that presidential campaign started really early. I remember that much.
Right, you would announce in 2006 and then primaries or
yeah. And now I just vote for whoever. I don't give a shit anymore.
Yeah,
I don't give a fuck.
It's all about vengeance and spite anyway.
Yeah,
so.
I think I'm gonna vote out of spite for myself. but yeah, this whole thing just tons and tons and tons of like minutes on screen. Dealing with this Senator Clay Davis shit, watching him be like, oh, this guy's about to fall, and having it all fall apart in
this
that one.
This dude fucking lays it on like molasses. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, fucking gorgeous.
It's cool because I'm like, that is what would happen. And at the same time, I'm like, there's not enough episodes left now, guys.
Yeah. Well, it's sort of like you wanted another episode where they're like deliberating and they're waiting for the verdict or something. Like they literally just smashed cut to successful press conference.
Yes.
Yeah. I like that, though. I like that. Yeah. I like that. I think like that's a good way to trim the fat. I mean, like.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, because the trial should have been more drawn out anyway. The trial is at least 3-4 more scenes longer, let alone fucking deliberations and people having coffee.
Right.
In
yeah,
the courthouse hallways waiting for the deliberations.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. There should have been. If they were going to include more stuff, I think it would have been more trial. And I think if they were to include more stuff, it would be what is the. result. Like, you never see.
Also, more Clay, like, I'm sorry to cut you off, but more Clay behind the scenes politicking, trying to, like, circle the wagons and, like, and showing him fretting and being vulnerable and possibly not achieving his objective.
Yeah.
And
so they had moments where he's like, you know, does like, you think Clay Davis is going down? You think I'm done. But there wasn't, like,
I mean, the negotiation over what he's going to have to pay his lawyer was a pretty good scene.
That was good. That was good. Great. But again, it's all squeezed into one episode, and I don't know.
I mean, I guess it's another good like bullshit asymmetry principle scene where it's like they spend, I don't know, a whole season building a case against this guy meticulously, and then he gets up there and he does a little bit, like he shifts the bullshit just a little bit enough to where they're like, oh well, shit, we don't have anything for that. Like,
he got it. Whatever it is, they don't teach it in law school.
Yep.
So this will not be the end of the Clay Davis storyline. We get to see how that is used. But again, I think there wasn't enough backstory for why Bond chose this path, why he lost. I mean, he lost because he decided not to go with the feds. The feds would have helped him try.
I mean, it was
case.
His own ambition, right?
Yes, like, it was his own ambition.
Shot
that
him in the
him.
Foot. Yep.
And I feel like, as someone who does a Wire podcast, that's very clear to me now. But as someone who was just viewing the show when I first saw it, like the first time, I was like, wait, what happened? That's it? Why did they do all that? So it wasn't very good. But so that's the episode. Favorite moment, least favorite moment, something I missed. Vince?
I talked about it. The Ain't You the Little King of Diamonds was my favorite line of the.
Ooh, nice.
Just that's a great, great punk line read.
And what about you, Brendan? Favorite moment, least favorite moment, something you wanted to talk about that we
did they have the Omar shootout in this episode, or was that the episode before?
That was the episode before.
Yeah.
Oh, well, or two episodes ago.
That's why he's on the crutch, yeah.
Yeah, my least favorite moment is the fact that the shootout happened in the
two episodes
in
ago.
That episode before, yeah.
I was watching this episode and going like, they should have do the shootout again. I wish they did it again.
He should have had a flashback or a bad dream about the shootout. Yeah.
That would have been sick. So if I had to give this episode a letter grade, I think I'm going to give it a solid B+. Vince, what would you give a letter grade to?
Yeah, I think this is one of my least favorite episodes of The Wire. And therefore I must give it a solid B+.
What? Yeah. And what about you, Brendan, Sex and the Third? If you had to give it a letter grade, what would you give it?
I mean, I commented on the cinematography before. I thought the cinematography was great. I thought some of the acting was freaking brilliant.
Yeah.
But because it's not season four, there's a lack of a shootout and there's a dearth of Jamie Hector, I'm going to have to give it a B+.
All right. So that would equal to a B+ episode of The Wire. But you know what, guys? It's been an A+ episode of Pod Yourself, The Wire. Yes. Brendan Sexton III, thank you so much for coming on the show and talking about The Wire with us.
Thank you for having me. It was a blast.
Hell yeah. Where can people find your work? Do you have anything you'd like to plug?
You know, I always forget the name of my films that I did, but
I can look them up.
yeah, I have some horror films coming out next year.
Oh, really?
Yeah, a couple of my friends, and so really, I'm actually really excited about those, and had a blast making them. One of them's called Shelby Oaks. The other one is being renamed. It took me a while to recall the names.
There's Oppenheimer, Barbie, Killers of the Flower Moon.
Barbie's my favorite horror film.
It's the one of the scariest movies I ever seen.
Terrifying.
But follow Brendan Sexton Jr. on imdb.com.
Yeah. You can follow Brendan Sexton on Twitter. But it's actually the president of the Uber Drivers Guild, but he's from Queens, and so it's all good. So if you want to follow him, just look up Brendan Sexton Twitter on Google, and you'll find him there. He's a good guy.
He's a good dude. We stand.
And that's
no
bullshit.
King.
Yeah.
Well, check him out. And again, Brendan, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Loved having you. Hell yeah.
Thank you. Peace. Yeah.
wires. Patreon.com/Frogcast. The $8 tier gets you a shout out and a street name. And a street name. Turtle Power. Vince, are you ready to give some shout out street names to people?
Yeah.
We have four of them this week. First is William O'Connor.
Oh, we call this guy the Weasel because he's always conning people. He's a conner.
Oh, okay. I didn't know where you're going with that. Okay. The second is, and I don't know how to pronounce this, Jerome Barbanson.
Barbie. Call this guy Barbie.
It's right there.
Yeah.
It is right there. Might as well go for it. We just talked about Barbie. It's perfect. All right. Next is Charles Eaton.
Eaton. We call this guy Fat Man because he's always eating.
Hell yeah. I like that. And last but not least,
we call him the Fat Man or Slim Chuck.
Oh, Slim Chuck is also good.
That's when you're flipping it because
you got to flip it for the cops because they don't know how to flip
that's
it.
Right, just that's a right. little.
And last but not least, Rex Bosworth.
We call this guy Syrup because he's not Mrs. Butterworth. He's Mr. Bosworth, which I think is a fake name, but I'm gonna go with it.
Yeah, you think so?
Syrup. That sounds like a street name, right?
It does, very much so. Oh, you think Rex Bosworth is a big name?
It does not sound like a real name, but
that's
maybe
true.
It is.
Rex meaning
cool.
King, Boss meaning boss, Worth meaning your worth. Who knows? It is too cool. But those are your shout out street names. If you have not heard your shout out street name, please tell us because we only have three episodes left. Probably four if you added, the mailbag that we're definitely going to do. So, email us for your questions, comments, concerns. Frogcast@gmail.com. Vince, what is a Google Voice number?
415-275-0030.
I farted. All right, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, farted again.
Oh,
thank you. Thank you guys. So, it's salmon. Thank you guys so much for listening. And until next time, if you come at the king, you best not miss.
Yeah.
Foggy took a gamble just to get his man. You win some, lose some at the grand jury.
At the grand jury is what I said.
He wanted to catch Clay, but ego got in the way.
Okay. My throat. How did Lemmy sing like that all the time? I think there's a way of singing, like in a gruff way that doesn't hurt you. And I just need a teacher or something to teach me. Bye.
All right. Everyone good? Stop. Oh, I love it.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.